Content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour. Now, here's your host, Dave Krieger.
And it's 12 noon on this Thursday on the Power Hour. Thank you so much for joining us. By the way, we forgot to mention that if you look on the show's postings on thepowerhour.com, that we have 20 homemade mouse poison recipes that work. You just love that. You got to love that.
I hate you, Mises, to pieces.
Got to love it. Is Joy on with us today?
Here I am.
Hello, Joy Pullman. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Thanks for joining us here on the show. You've got this new book out. And I got a copy of it, and I was reading through it. False Flag, Why Queer Politics Mean the End of America. And I'm looking at this going, okay, well, this is something that, you know, a lot of us on this show are near and dear, somewhat familiar with. You've done a little bit more digging into this thing and looked at how all this stuff got started and where we are now, based on how all this got started way back when. And I know I have friends who I have talked to, acquaintances who are gay, that didn't like any of this stuff. I mean, way back in the 40s and 50s, everybody kept this stuff to themselves. And now it's in your face. You can't avoid it. And so something happened between then and now. Can you fill in the blanks?
Right, right. Well, we've been told that all we're going to do, you know, with accepting queers is just be tolerant and let people behave in private just, you know, as they please, and it wouldn't affect the rest of us. But that's really not what we've gotten at all. As I'm sure pretty much all of your listeners by now are aware, you know, you can't go into a store, not just in June anymore, but a big box store almost all the rest of the year. I can't go to my public library either. I can't walk down my neighborhood street without seeing all these flags for what looks like an occupying foreign power. So I thought about that a lot, and I went into the book to, you know, really look at what's behind this phenomenon. We're really not being asked, you know, just to ignore people's private consenting behavior behind closed doors. We're really being asked to accept a very wide range of public behaviors and exhibitions that we would never accept, for example, from heterosexuals. And so what really is behind that? And so, I mean, at the bottom of it, what's driving this, I would say, is the anti-American communist, I call it sexual communism ideology, that what it really wants to do, you know, they say they want to invert the hierarchies. What that means, they literally explicitly say this, I quote them, you know, saying it, is putting white heterosexual men and women at the bottom of the power structure right now, you know, or formerly they believe they're at top. And they want to put literally pedophiles at the top, queer people, transsexuals, and so forth. They want to end heteronormativity. Now, you know, if something is the norm, at least 50% of people are doing it, right? So if we're talking about ending heteronormativity, we're talking about making at least 51% of people something other than heterosexual. So we're not talking about a tiny minority group that just wants to have inclusion, you know, at least not be bothered over in its corner. We're talking about every single person, as we are now, will see changes to their lives and, you know, to their, you know, and what I basically argue is this is a new kind of form of government, that identity rights push that is replacing the old American rights and having our original constitutional rights like freedom of worship, freedom of speech. And I actually go through the entire Bill of Rights in the book and show how these identity politics rights displace them all with, again, essentially whatever word you want to use for it, totalitarianism, Marxism, cultural Marxism, but the point is, you know, it's not the America that we were originally told that we, that secures our natural rights as outlined in the Constitution.
And of course, that we're supposed to embrace as well. Now, see, here's the thing, folks. If you don't know Joy Pullman, all right, she's executive editor of The Federalist. And we're talking about Molly Hemingway. I mean, that Federalist, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And also mother of five.
Six.
Author of The Edge. Oh, six now. Wow. Boy, they need to update your bio.
hard to keep up. I can tell you.
Well, what a faux pas that was. Holy smokes, did I screw that up?
You know, can hardly keep track of those.
Yeah, I mean, how can he keep track? I mean, Ketanji Brown Jackson doesn't even know what a woman is. And then here you got six kids instead of five now. Wow.
I figured out how the woman thing works by now.
I knew that. Just based on that. I mean, seriously, folks. She has been around the block. She understands, you know, and identifies as Native American and gender natural. That would mean that she knows what the definition of a woman is, unlike Ketanji Brown Jackson, that doesn't know basically her proverbial ass from hole in the ground. I think that would be fair. Now, in the former days, you used to call yourself a feminist and libertarian, both of which you now consider silly. Would that be a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. I was young and inexperienced. And I think I forget who is the great thinker who was it G.K. Chesterton, you know, who said if you weren't, you know, basically that disposition when you were young, you have no heart. But if you weren't a conservative or, you know, when you're older, then you have no brain. So hopefully I'm combining both of the two at this point in my life.
Yeah. Well, you live in the Hoosier state. What do you think of the Indiana Fever?
Well, I can't really talk about that, but I am super interested in what happened with our vice governor, the lieutenant governor here in the state. There was a surprise upset by an outsider candidate against Senator Mike Braun, who is the Republican Party pick for governor. He handpicked a different lieutenant governor than the one that the state nominating convention chose. And the one the convention chose is actually more socially very outspoken, more socially conservative. He's a pastor, well-known for both writing a lot of COVID vaccine exemptions as well as his stand against pornography in school. So interesting things going on in that red state.
No doubt. Well, see, I was looking at, and we were talking about this earlier, what they're doing to Caitlin Clark. And Caitlin Clark came from Iowa to Indiana, and she's playing for the Fever now. And the rest of the league is beating her up because she's not a black lesbian, basically.
Oh, I've heard about that.
I mean, this is the craziness. I mean, we've had listeners call the show and talk about it, too, because they like her. She's one of the reasons why the
apparently WNBA. She's one of the few people in the entire league who actually can perform and is watchable. So, of course, naturally, all the other low performers in the league want to pull her down.
Bingo. And see, this is a problem. I really do believe that this is part of that cancel culture out there that you write about. Because, I mean, if you're not black female and you're not lesbian and you're not, hanging out in the locker room with the other girls, you know, and doing things that girls behind closed doors do. And then they want to rub it in everybody else's face and make it acceptable. This is a problem. The Bible talks about it in so many different ways. And of course, you know, the bigger problem is that they, like the transgender movement, they want your kids. And they've said it openly. You write about that as well. Can you deep dive a little bit into that subject?
Right. So it's now become a regular chant at pride parades. 10% is not enough. Groom, groom, groom. So again, we were told, right, you know, born this way. And, you know, historically speaking, as I note in the book, you know, it's maybe 1 to 3% of any population has identified as homosexual. But now we have among Generation Z, something like 20-25% are identifying as something other than heterosexual, right? So that is completely out of the historic norm. And there's other, I mean, so I look through the social science research as well as other indications, such as, for example, at leftist liberal arts colleges, 40% of students will identify as something other than heterosexual. And there's research, for example, from the, you know, canceled author, leftist feminist author, Lisa Lippman at Brown University. She did a study, one of the earliest ones that was published, showing that there's an absolute social contagion effect to young girls identifying as transgender. So, for example, she thought it was unusual, statistically impossible, that entire groups of young girls would all identify as transgender together, right? That, again, if, you know, same thing with homosexuality. If it was innate, you know, born, you know, sort of thing, that would not happen. So we actually know, you know, social scientists in the United States have been looking, and all over the world, have been looking for a gay gene for something like 30, 40 plus years. And they basically have concluded, you know, again, these are completely left, you know, pro-rainbow academics. They don't think there is a gay gene. Maybe up to a third of identification with something other than heterosexuality could maybe be explained by genes, but that means the majority of it is related to your environment, your social conditioning, other, you know, factors they can't explain by genetics. And so I argue in the book, you know, if there is no proof that this is inborn, and we also have evidence that some of this is related to social contagion. So, for example, there's research showing, and transsexual people such as the leftist writer who was in The Atlantic recently, Andrea Long Chu, he says, he says that he watching pornography made him transgender. And there's a lot of research to back that up. So there's an evidence of pornography having an effect on people's sexual proclivities. We have, I quote in the book, pornography executives saying that they put in non-heterosexual things to hook people and turn them and get them looking into hardcore pornography and basically being addicted to their products. So there absolutely are plenty other factors here that are going on too. And again, with that chant, groom, 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 10% is not enough. You see a lot of people in the queer movement do believe that they can make converts. And so I think that amounts for some of their interest in children. They're looking for converts to their cause. And this is, again, way, way beyond what we were told 20, you know, plus years ago. It's, you know, this is inborn. It's genetic. I'm born this way. The narrative has completely changed on that. But my bottom line argument is, if there is some malleability to this, A of all, why wouldn't we just like take a step back? And especially with young kids, you know, give them time and get them away from the screens and the pornography for one thing. But second of all, why would we ever attach any rights to something that could be fluid? We want to attach people's rights to something that they share that is equal, their humanity, their equal value. All people are created equal, and their rights should, you know, come equally from God, not be separable and distinct based on skin color, genetics, or any other thing you can come up with. We all should have equal rights, not different group rights where some people have special privileges and others do not.
But then you have Obergefell.
That's one of my favorite sections in the book.
That's our Supreme Court.
Well, our Supreme Court, they really don't know how sex works. We can get to that in a second. But Obergefell, right? It was based on the idea that homosexuality is genetic. But, you know, it's been proven again. That's completely false. So that entire decision completely changed, you know, many, many, and we're continuing to see more legal changes for that. The Supreme Court was completely out to lunch there. They thought they were doing something compassionate, and really they got, you know, snookered hook, line, and sinker, and that happens a lot with them.
Well, it makes me wonder how many people are blackmailed in our Congress to even allow law to get that far, where it passes and give these people the kind of stuff that allows, like Chloe Cole, who now has said, I used to be all that, and now I had my breasts lopped off, and now she's gone public, and they hate her with a passion. She speaks to the contrary of every single thing, saying, I don't know why I did it. She wasn't going to have.
She was young and she was pressured, and her parents were pressured, saying, you know, I've read interviews with her. Her parents were told, you know, she's going to kill herself if you don't do this, right? That's the highest form possibly of manipulation to parents, to lock them, put them in a headlock, to do irreversible damage to their daughter's body. She is a brave young woman, you know, being able to withstand all of that kind of pressure. I really admire her.
As opposed to somebody like Ellen, now Elliot Page.
Well, I mean, I actually have a lot of compassion for people who are transgender identifying. I think it is absolutely related to traumas in their lives. If you know, I write about this in the book too, you know, so I'm a reporter, I'm an editor. We do a lot of stories at The Federalist on, queer politics. And so every time I hear about, you know, transgender, a case involving a transgender person, I look into them and I always find that they have traumatic things in their family. You know, maybe they had a parent die young, their parents, very often there's a divorce or separation going on there. There's just other things, you know, that have been some transgender people report that they were molested as children. So, I think all of that is real, that absolutely that when someone identifies as the other sex, that they are basically, it's a cry for help, just like suicide is. And I think we should have compassion for those people. But I don't think it's compassionate to chop off their body parts and tell them to hurt themselves. I think it would be compassionate to help them resolve their traumas and find a community of people who love them for what they truly are, which is, you know, the sex they were born as.
But the Gen Z population in America right now is under so much peer pressure to comport with this nonsense. It's tearing up the family unit. this is a bigger problem because the parents just don't know what to do other than yank their kid out of that environment and homeschool him, which a lot mm-hmm. of parents are doing because they can't stand what's going on in the schools because they're promoting it.
Well, that's right. And that was something that, so I read through Lisa Littman's Brown University study when it came out, and it was very striking to me. She reports the immense peer pressure that were surrounding kids. She quotes young people in middle and high school saying, if you were the slur word cis, which is used for people who accept their birth sex, if you were gender natural, you were called names, you were looked down on. If you were not, if you were heterosexual, you were also, you know, criticized, you know, thought of as a bigot, as an evil white person, all of those things. So basically, in order to earn peer acceptance in some K-12 environments, kids have to, you know, identify as something so that they are not seen as on the out. So that's obviously a dysfunctional peer environment, but a lot of parents are not aware of what their kids are, you know, doing, talking, hearing in the cesspits of environments that they're. But I mean, I think something important that's related to there is the explosion of porn viewership. There are, I think most parents, probably at least most, and maybe the vast majority, simply have no idea what their young people can and are seeing on the phones that their parents pay for and give them and don't put filters on. You know, so I have in the book lots of quotes of, you know, for example, singer Billie Eilish. You know, she says that she saw pornography at a young age and it completely scarred her. And she now has come out as a lesbian, you know, but she wore those baggy clothes in public for all those years because of the pornography had terrified her and made her hate being a woman. Right. So I think she's not the only one. I know that, you know, the average age of first seeing porn in the United States is 10, 11 years old. And absolutely seeing that filth is destructive to young people's understanding of their bodies, how male and female should relate to each other. You know, pornography is degrading. It teaches people violence against each other, not loving, committed relationships and kindness to each other. So, you know, so when young people are basically getting sex education from straight pornography and basically soft porn, you know, through the TV and the other media they're being given, it's no wonder that so many of them are being identifying with that because that's all they have seen. That's the majority of what they've seen as a model for sexual behavior.
Well, this would be the parents. This would be an issue that they have to deal with or should have dealt with and didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, is it partially the parents' fault that they fell into this trap?
Totally. I mean, if I think any parent who gives an unsupervised internet access to their kids is a fool, just straight up. You never should do that. And that has, you know, that's just not a new thing with cell phones, although the cell phones, right, have, you know, made it more possible for things to be handed around. But I mean, yeah, any parent who does that, they're just complete fools.
I get that. This is something that, you know, we've always tried to get our kids to do the right thing. And of course, you know, they want to go look. You tell a kid no, what do they do? Just the opposite. The sad thing about all of this, Joy, I have found out, and I did studies on this as well. I didn't write about it like you did in The Federalist, but, you know, I look at stuff like this and I look at the rate of suicide among people that have dared to step over that line. And has your research led you to the same conclusion?
When you say step over that line, what do you mean?
In other words, they get to the point where all of a sudden now they're depressed. They're
oh, sure. Pornography makes people depressed.
And they kill themselves. But they kill themselves. They transgender. They transition. Sure. And they kill themselves because all of a sudden they realize, oh, my God, I made a big mistake. I can't have an orgasm. I'm a mess. Mm-hmm. I've gone completely off the rails. Now I'm doing drugs to try to overcome it. Next thing you know, they overdose. So they just flat out put a gun to their head.
I mean, the statistics do say that, you know, transgender people have some of the highest suicide rates in the country. And I, you know, just want to, for anyone who's listening to that, you do have a reason to live. And there are, you know, you can make your life better. There is hope for you. Don't give up. Look for healthy people who will treat you well and accept who you actually are. Yeah, I actually, you know, some people have talked about some of those statistics are overblown or, as I mentioned, used as cudgels to beat up the parents. But I actually think that they do speak to a real truth, which is that, you know, I think the transgender sort of thing is being presented as a positive option for people who already were having difficulties, who already were in the super sad depressed box. So I do think that the statistics showing that overlap are absolutely genuine. I do think that's reason for compassion and reaching out to offer genuine help to people who, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times abused people, they seek abuse as a way to try to resolve the abuse, you know, and that's a pattern we've, you know, we see, for example, people who are molested as children, you know, sometimes, you know, they grew up and they might become, you know, paid for pornography or other things, right? They're basically just trying to heal those wounds with, you know, basically inflicting worse ones. And it's hard when you have been horribly abused, especially at a young age, to be able to come out of that without some assistance from someone, without having a lifeline to hold on to. I mean, I think this whole situation points to the fact that our society really has some seriously troubled people, and that instead of actually seeking ways to legitimately help them, we just give them these horrible fake fixes and that are basically lies and only make things worse for them.
Agreed. The other part of the problem is tonight we're going to have a debate. I call it a mass debate. They're mass debating together. The whole bunch of them are nothing but masturbators. And the problem I have is that the media just can't leave this stuff alone. The LGBTQ movement is so afraid that Biden's going to leave them out of the debate somehow. I mean, you know, here we have an administration that caters to this stuff. And you've got to wonder, because of the diary. I said this morning on the show that if I were Trump, I would bring up Ashley's diary and say, look, is this the kind of leadership by example? Who do you want, a groper or a pedophile at the debate platform? Maybe take your frickin' pick.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
This is just enraging. I mean, I'm serious. I am looking at this stuff. I mean, you talk about fodder and entertainment, and people are just going to like, give me the popcorn and the beer, man. Let's just watch this. And they're so scared that the LGBTQ, let's get Biden to quit. That's how I remember the acronym. I'm looking at this thing going, okay, how is this going to play out, you think, tonight? I mean, you really think that they have a lot to worry about, that their cause is not going to get propelled out there during the debate?
Well, there is something about the sort of like queer, they call it a community, but I'm not really sure if it's a community because parts of it hate each other. You know, so there's enmity, for example, between lesbians and transgender people, mm-hmm. and homosexuals apparently don't actually get along that well with lesbians as well, you know. So I don't know about the community word, but you know, the folks who coalesce around that banner, sometimes they really give off really needy vibes, you know, just kind of like, I don't really know if their environment was that healthy growing up because they seem to have psychological issues. And one of the psychological issues is narcissism, right? Like me, talk about me all the time, talk about my issue. We're a very small, but I just don't understand. I mean, I just don't think that there are actually issues that relate to being queer that aren't also issues that affect people who are not queer, right? So, for example, queer people also should have their rights secured. They also are facing inflation. They also are having a hard time getting housing. They also, you know, could be drafted if we have World War III, you know, with Russia over Ukraine. You know, all of those issues, I think just the sequestering and pretending like these sort of soft celebrity, you know, issues are really what defines them, is basically a way of making sure that they vote for Democrats who otherwise have to do absolutely nothing for queer people that actually improves their lives. So I think, you know, so basically all this identity politics is basically just in the book, I call it, it's like giving them cheap trinkets made in China, right? It's buying them off with garbage.
Timu, you know? Timu.
And they should be that's right, Timu. No kidding. I mean, I just think it's kind of embarrassing that they can be bought off in that way without actually having something. I mean, healthcare is super expensive in this country. You know, no matter what you're doing in the bedroom at night, you just basic being insured is a third to a half of people's salaries. And just talking about queer stuff like actually is the whole enchilada is ridiculous and diverts the debate from the fact that the country is, you know, disintegrating, the daily living standards for people are going down, and that matters to everybody, no matter, again, what, you know, what you do at night or what kind of glitter you put on your face.
That's an interesting concept. And the thing is, too, is that parents, again, we go back to the parents, and they have you have parents out there that literally are taking their kids to drag shows. And I look at these people and go, why are you doing this to your children? Why are you exposing them to this stuff? I mean, are these people that deluded that they actually fall for this hook, line, and sinker? Do you think these people were exposed to this stuff in an early age, have come to accept it, and think their kids should, too? Is that what's happening here?
I mean, those people are obviously horrible parents. And it doesn't have anything to do, again, with the kind of, like, if I showed my kids Playboy magazines, I know they're not in print anymore, but, like, if I had a stash and I show them to my kids, like, that would be sick and weird, right? Like, that's just, kids and sex shouldn't mix, and everybody used to accept that until 10 minutes ago. And I actually think, you know, states need to pass and enforce. I mean, there are many laws on the books that are against sexual exhibition in public, and they are disregarded by, I mean, it's not just the police, but also the police sometimes in some cases know if they arrested a guy who, you know, was putting his behind out to little children on the public street, they knew that they know the policeman would get in trouble, right, if he did that. So they need to have political backup, by the elected officials, as well as, you know, by the people in their cities. And I think the majority of Americans, they don't think it's right to dress 9-year-olds up in stripper clothes, you know, and put them out on a catwalk. And the fact that some people are doing that while the rest of us have no recourse really, really inflames the silent majority in the country, because we know that that's child abuse and it should be treated as such.
And why do you think that, I mean, as far as the percentages go, are we still looking at the 1-point-something% of the total population falls into this category, or is it greater than that?
Well, just it depends on how you go by age, right? So boomers right now, that is 1 to 3, maybe 5%. But then you move all the way down to the youngest generation, the Generation Z, and those are 20 to 25%. And that's also not just a U.S. Thing. That also is across Western nations globally.
Wow. Boy, this is incredible. The statistics. Holy smokes.
They're crazy.
And the thing is, too, now they've got DEI. And that's another thing. And I know we've had Anna Angievsky with Open the Books on the show. And we've talked about this at great length about how DEI has permeated everything, even though they're trying to shut it down. This is actually advocating this movement, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, and I actually in the book do a lot of work to tie in the sexual politics part to the rest, you know, the DE&I movement, because I tie it into race politics, for example. You know, so I think a lot of your listeners will be aware of Chris Rufo's book, you know, America's Cultural Revolution. And he really in that book focused on the race aspect of the politics. And so I see my book kind of as a counterpart looking at the sexual aspect of that. Because the truth is that if we want to have a free country in any sense of the word, the only kind of people who are capable of being free are those who, on average, who grew up in the married homes of their own biological parents who stay married together for life. If you want people to be self-controlled, restraining their impulses, nonviolent, be able to work out problems with people, not following their passions, not, you know, hooked up on drugs, all the risky behaviors that make people basically, you know, go onto some form of public support. All of those are at their lowest if you look at the demographic of kids raised by their married two parents, regardless of family income level, in fact. So we know that we need more of those kids, people raised in that environment, in order to have a self-governing society. But each year we have fewer and fewer, you know, percentage of our population that has that grow up environment. So then I think it's no surprise that you look out and we see, you know, Gen Z at 20-25% are identifying that. That is I think that's a distress signal that they are saying that my upbringing was chaotic. Even if their home life was good, maybe their school environment or their, you know, on social media. Social media is an anti-child environment. It does expose them to soft and hard porn. And so kids are saying, you know, things have been chaos for me. I'm not stable. I don't have a sense of self. And so they're affiliating, you know, with those identity politics groups to have a sense of worth and identity that they should have gotten from their own families and communities.
No doubt. Joy Pullman is with us. She's going to be back with us after the break. We're going to take a break for some important messages here, and we'll take your phone calls too at 844-769-2944. It's our toll-free number. When you get to the prompts, press 1 and you can get into the conversation. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
For many years, the Pyra Mall has been a trailblazer, leading the way in providing our customers with only the best health, wellness, and readiness products. We have worked hand in hand, helping to grow many small businesses, and we continue to provide exceptional customer service, educating our customers so they can make informed purchases. You can shop with confidence, knowing that we have personally vetted every product that we offer. Your health and well-being means so much to us. We have championed voting with your dollars, and when you shop with the Pyra Mall, you are helping to keep ever so important and often censored health information in the forefront. Buy from the good guys. Shop theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com. Or call 877-817-9829.
Come to the Power Mall today and purchase Mediterranean Black Seed Oil from North American Urban Spice. Exclusively from the genetic source and never standardized. Cold pressed, it's so good it supports cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, digestive, neurologic health, and so much more. Said to be good for everything but death itself, come find the best prices on Black Seed capsules or 8-ounce varieties when you visit thepowermall.com. Or call 877-817-9829 to purchase.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I have a good friend with me here today. She has been taking the calcium bentonite clay that she purchased from the Power Mall for many, many years now. And I asked her to sit with me and explain to the listeners what she uses the clay for.
Thanks. So just to let you know, we use it on a daily basis. I will put a teaspoon of calcium bentonite clay into a glass of water and drink it before bed for detox. We've done weekly foot soaks for my husband who has diabetes. We use it for facials. I use it once a week for my clay bath detox. We've used it on spider bites, insect bites, and I've also used it for the swelling in my ankle after surgery.
Oh, yes, I do remember when you had the surgery. To order the clay, please call 877-817-9829 or go to thepowermall.com. Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Many Americans are growing increasingly concerned about the rapidly growing U.S. government deficits. Recognizing that the additional printing of paper money devalues U.S. currency. To compensate, American gold and silver coins will provide wealth protection. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins delivered directly to our clients. You can reach us at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Why invest in all the great natural supplements from the Power Mall and then use a toothpaste loaded with harmful synthetic chemicals like fluoride? You want really healthy checkups, right? People who switch to Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash are reporting healthy-looking gums and whiter teeth. Both the Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash are formulated with natural products like zinc, folic acid, cloves, and myrrh. It's nature's answer to preventing plaque, reducing the development of cavities, and promoting healthy teeth and gums. Vitamir toothpaste comes in original formula and also with CoQ10 and xylitol, as well as in a great-tasting orange-flavored children's formula, too. Get Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash from the Power Mall today, and you, too, can have healthy checkups. Call 877-817-9829. Or order from thepowermall.com.
Three minutes after the hour of 12 noon Central Time, where we are, we're on the horn with Joy Pullman, has a book out called False Flag, Why Queer Politics Mean the End of America. And I guess, you know, to get back at the title of this, welcome back to the segment, Joy.
Thank you.
False flag. Most people, when they think of it, they think of 9/11 and the fact that we got suckered into going over to Iraq and tearing that country out and creating a political vacuum when we got rid of its leader. I'm looking at false flag in this regard. How do you liken the two?
Well, a false flag is basically when, you know, you are, it's kind of like a bait and switch, right? You think that, you know, the people are, they're under a flag of that actually isn't the people, that are running the flag, right? So it would be like, you know, if a bunch of Russians wave the American flag, right? So saying one thing, but actually doing another in order to trick people. And I think that's one of the central ways that the whole sexual revolution regime has been passed in the United States. You know, we were told that it would be kind, loving, good, open up all these freedoms for people, wouldn't cost other people much of anything, et cetera, et cetera. And all of those were lies, and they were from the beginning. You know, but a lot of Americans are good-hearted and sometimes naive people, and so they wanted to believe the best and be kind to a small sexual minority in our country. And so they really, you know, allowed the camel's nose under the tent, and now we've got the whole camel in, you know, and people really are not comfortable with what they saw that they opened the door to.
Right. Now, the sexual identity politics, I mean, we've been talking about that, folks. And if you want to chime in, the number is 844-769-2944. Press 1 when you get to the prompts to get into the studio to participate in the conversation here. We're talking about identity politics. It's been sexualized. This started way before the 1960s and free love, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I go back in the book actually to the time of Woodrow Wilson and FDR, because they are some of the prominent people, along with their so-called brain trust, which were a lot of whom were actual communists and fellow travelers. They were the people who put into place the competing regime of government that has grown and grown and grown to basically not just be a competitor to our original form of government as overseen by our Constitution, but now I think is really threatening to engulf the original constitutional form of government and the way of life that sustains it. So, I mean, I think the easiest perhaps thing to think about that ties their era together now with the sexual revolution politics that we're seeing is that they both start with basically the refusal to accept truth outside of the individual. So Woodrow Wilson, FDR, and the social Darwinists of their time, they rejected that human has a stable nature that is created and given by a God, as our founders believed. And they believed that government should take the place of God in directing the evolution of humans. And therefore, there were no natural rights that are inherent to people that are true through all times and all places for all people. And they believe that, so therefore, government gives rights and they can take them away. And what is a right can change over time. So they gave us the concept of the living constitution. And so that is exactly what's, you know, the mechanisms of government being used to push sexual politics today. You know, the Biden administration is using its executive agencies that were created by Wilson and FDR basically as a fourth branch of government that now is overtaking the other three. And they are the ones that push the sexual politics. Right. So, for example, the Title IX, you know, that is basically forcing boys into girls' locker rooms, you know, dorm rooms and all the rest. The Biden administration is using the USDA, the school lunches, it's even food stamp subsidies. It's saying if you want to accept food stamps, you have to allow, you know, men into women's bathrooms and cross-dressing on the job and all of that sort of thing. So basically it uses this, what, you know, they call the administrative state or the deep state is the organ by which the sexual politics accomplish their revolution. And that is that entire branch of government, almost all of it is unconstitutional and against the Constitution. And it's been used to trample all of our rights.
So the state of Arkansas, the Supreme Court just passed a law that says you're going to get a driver's license or a state ID. It's going to say male or female, and you're going to fight Title IX. And Sarah Sanders is like, yes, I'm all for that. The rest of this is nonsense. Is this up to the states to fight this? Because the federal government obviously is not.
Right. I mean, I think most of Congress is a lost cause. You know, there's only a couple of decent congressmen who are actually trying to do, you know, anything worthwhile, and they're not in the majority, frankly. So I do think that states and localities have to step up to the plate. They're closer to the people. They're better at representing the will of the people. I mean, both on left and right, but we're talking, you know, 80%, 85%, you know, depending on the polls you look at, of people who are lean right as voters consider the sexual politics, the tranny stuff to be their number one most urgent issue. So it's a super concerning thing. And there's a number of states, you know, that are controlled, you know, by Republicans and have significant power. And they frankly are a little bit behind their own voters in solving those problems. But they do have a lot of things that they can do. And not least of which is filing these lawsuits against the federal government, simply saying, look, that's an unconstitutional order. We're not going to follow it in this state. And providing, for example, you know, legal protections for the people in their state. If they're harassed by the federal government, by their agencies, you know, their state attorney generals, even their local attorney generals could go to bat for them and provide a defense for them against the federal government that is using their money to take away their rights.
I'm just looking at this as reverse discrimination. I mean, how far can they push this thing until we hit the edge of the envelope? And then finally, the Supreme Court goes, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, the whites are in the minority. And I mean, it's like, OK, you know, with letting all these people across the border. And I mean, they're being exposed to this. A lot of them are Roman Catholics. Some of them don't believe in it. A lot of them are pedophiles. A lot of them are murderers and shoplifters. And they assault people on the street. I mean, they're all of a sudden going to be left out in the cold. And this is almost like when you look at the Pride movement now, they got to have a whole month to celebrate their cause. And the big problem is that this could turn out for them like Animal Farm.
Well, I mean, sometimes, honestly, when I go out in my streets, and again, I mean, I still live in, you know, relatively safe area, you know, but sometimes it does feel like Animal Farm. You know, I've sit on my front porch and watch, you know, tranny walk down the street in broad daylight, and I have my babies in the, you know, on my porch seat next to me, and they're like, "Mommy, what's that?" I'm like, "Oh, a sad person, you know." But like, I shouldn't be able to sit on my front porch without having, you know, freaky looking people, you know, walking around that I have to not only explain to my children, but right, I don't know if that person is a threat. Are they doing drugs? I mean, they're acting in a way that, you know, that just seems erratic. Like, and at some point where you think, okay, I won't want to get too close to that person because I don't know what he might do for me. That shouldn't be the case. I mean, we should have safe neighborhoods. My kids should be able to go to the local park, you know, and we should be able to go to the library and not have, you know, all these queer books assaulting their eyes right at their eye level, you know, and showing literal pornography to children. I mean, that's been very well reported. The public square should not be a hostile place for children, and making it that way is not only anti-child, but anti-furtherization is the word I'm looking for, I think. The flourishing of your society. You know, when children literally cannot go out safely in public, what kind of a society you have? It's not one that I want to live in.
Right. Now, what do you think? Have you heard about that giant gay flag being put up in Mexico? I mean, we were talking earlier about, one of our callers just called in and commented on that there was a giant gay flag, pride flag hung in Mexico. And I'm just like, well, you know, earlier you brought up the fact that this woke theocracy and all this other garbage that's going on right now is not just confined to the United States. It's all over the place.
Well, it's kind of a transnational regime. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of this is coming from south of the border. I mean, isn't a lot of this coming from all of these migrants coming in across our borders?
I mean,
think it's limited as to that? You think they have to wait here and then get exposed to all that?
Yeah, I mean, everyone is exposed to that sort of filth because everyone all across the globe has a cell phone. And then the United States is giving these cell phones to the migrants, right? We're paying for them to have internet access. So they too can, you know, see American values as preached by naked people. And I mean, just go to TikTok, right? You know, go to Twitter, go to Facebook. It's Snapchat, right? Full of actually pornographic ads and content for kids. And they push the transgenderism and so forth content, especially on young people. But I don't think like the migrants are coming here looking for that. Most of them some of them have nefarious goals. I think some are agents for foreign countries, but I think the vast majority simply want to come and, you know, and have a better life than is in their horrible countries of origin.
But the
I don't think when they get here, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we're ruining the thing that they're coming for, right? They want stability, prosperity, you know, all they want to escape chaos. And what we're doing is inflicting chaos on ourselves, both in the form of, you know, letting all of these people in that we don't know where they come from or how they'll blend with our culture, but also in the form of, you know, destroying our families bit by bit. That's the building block of society.
But the thing is that it's the family norms that they are actually trying to uphold. They come from their country, and families in foreign countries are a very big thing. But you see all these military age men coming across the border, and then they come in and they get exposed to all of this stuff. And they're just like scratching their heads going, wow, well, this country's really messed up.
I mean, China, for example, they just can't believe what a gift it is to them that we're destroying our own population with this stuff. Right. They limit pornography. They limit, you know, gay stuff shown on all of their networks because they actually want their people to be strong and healthy and happy. You know, and I mean, I don't support basically any of their authoritarian methods. But the fact that like an authoritarian country like China actually, you know, is better at protecting its population and making things not horrible for its people than our own rulers is very shocking to me.
Right. Mike in Tennessee, do you have a question for Joy Pullman?
Well, I wanted to make a comment. The what comes to mind, you mentioned earlier, talking about the false flag issue, and a lady named Rosa Corey, who was on with Joyce many years ago, wrote a book called Behind the Green Mask, and she talked about a technique called the Delphi technique, whereas the City Hall commissioners will give you an option. Okay, we were going to manufacture or make it so that everybody has to have licenses or state-issued IDs, and we're going to allow you to have the ability to put X so that your gender is not identified, and then people would go in there and argue that are already in place. Well, we're going to eliminate the X issue. We'll just make it so you just have to get a license. So at the end of the day, they really didn't want you to have to choose between X or listing your gender. They wanted everybody to have a state-issued ID. That was the goal. And so they use that as a pretense, and it's called the Delphi technique. And I think right now, as a tribal Native American who's not with – I'm with the Native American people, not a nation. So I'm not a corporate – look at all your Native American nations that are all capital corporations. They're no difference than the state of fill in the blank. And when you are dropped from your bank because you don't have a state-issued ID after 47 years, and you shop around for another bank to open up a savings or checking account with a Social Security card, with a birth certificate, but no state-issued ID, there's an agenda afoot. They want everybody to be assimilated into a state right now, and this is something that people need to be aware of because, like tribal members, like the Amish, we, the people, were the creators of the organic constitution, and what they've created is a club. And if you will call yourself a citizen by choice, you've submitted to their will and you're under them. And I'd like to encourage people to take their rightful place as the people, whether you're Native or Amish or just an American, you're still one of the people,
really,
but you have to assert your rights.
I get that, Mike, and I appreciate your call. The bigger problem that we have is that right now we're talking about the destabilization of the family, no matter what it goes on that driver's license or state ID. And I get the fact that when these illegals come into the country, whether they're transgender or queer or whatever the case may be, everybody's under that same umbrella. Pretty soon they're going to mandate all these foreigners go take that jab. We've been exposed to that. They're going to want them to get several COVID shots and boosters, and people are going to drop dead just like they are doing now. So, I mean, this is a whole culture to just disrupt what's going on. But, you know, the focus here is what they're trying to force on us with sexual identity politics that goes back. And we've got the federal government basically catering to this stuff. And it's like we cannot control what the federal government is doing. It's going to happen in the state level. We're going to have to fight this on the state. Joy, your comment on that.
I mean, that's a good point, Dave. I was just thinking, I mean, I have heard about the Delphi technique, but I understood it basically. And maybe this is something that the caller was pointing out. It's basically a way to arrive at a predetermined, public decision while pretending that you had heard public comment. And that is essentially how the whole administrative state works, right? They put out a rule that is basically a law. They're passing a law without being Congress. They have no legal authorization to pass these laws. And then they have the Administrative Procedures Act says they have to put out for public comment. So they do that, but it's pro forma. You know, they don't have to change actually anything in result as a result of public comment. They just have to basically impose a 6 month or whatever the period is, waiting period. So I do actually, I mean, I agree with you, the fact that, you know, the American people really have lost a lot of our influence over our government. We're not so much being taxed without representation. It's some often feels like no matter how you vote, you know, nothing changes, because I don't know what happens, you know, in the halls of power. It's kind of like people get assimilated to the Borg up there. But the lack of responsiveness to what people actually want is really important part of these sexual politics, because the majority of people don't want to live in a sexually chaotic society and also an unhappy one. And people are unhappy when they don't have thick, close, long-term family ties.
That is a big problem. Sherry in Kansas, you're back on the show with Joy Pullman. Go ahead.
Yes. This type of thing happened about 100 years ago in Germany after World War I, when the Versailles Treaty just devastated the economy of Germany. World War I was a completely bogus war. And there, you guys aren't talking about the elephant in the room, a minority of a minority that are pushing this problem. They did the same thing in Germany after World War One.
Okay. Joy, your comment on that. Thanks, Sherry, for your call.
It is true that, you know, war is tends to make people and, you know, their societies a complete mess after it. You know, there are a lot of things. Like the communists are very deeply involved in what I would just call sexual perversion. I mean, after World War One, you know, there were people actually involved in pedophilia. You know, Michel Foucault, one of the chief preeminent and early philosophers of gender theory, he also, you know, raped small children, you know, out of the United States. And so so war really, really can impose a huge amount of chaos on people such that they start doing things that they never would do if society were ordered otherwise. So I think it's a really it gives us a lesson in understanding when you destabilize people, and war is perhaps the ultimate destabilizer, you know, all hell breaks loose, literally speaking. And so usually after wars, there are a lot of sexual experimentation. I mean, syphilis, gonorrhea, very high, you know, after both World War One, World War Two, because those conditions, people just lose the normal restraints that help order their lives and, again, keep them happy.
Well, but the thing is that everything in this society is being broken up for one cause or another, whether it's, you know, throw away divorces, throw away marriages. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of that these days. I mean, they don't stay married long and they divorce. Transgenderism sometimes causes divisions in marriages. Feminism causes divisions in marriages. Yep. I mean, you know, pick your flavor. I mean, this is what we're facing right now. I mean, how do we fight this?
Well, I think the number one way to fight it actually is just to invest in the people in your family and in your local community. If people are isolated, psychologically distressed, alienated, lonely, you should start by making sure that the people in your home are not lonely and alienated and distressed. Work on your relationships. If you have a tough relationship or couple, see how you can invest in that and make it better. If you have a good, stable home life, consider reaching out to someone that you know or have encountered and invite them into your stability and give them, you know, friendship. If you're, you know, maybe you have a kid in the carpool who his parents are divorcing, or he's going through a tough time, or maybe they just ignore him because there's, you know, both working and they're super busy. You know, maybe he could come home for a family dinner. Maybe you could listen to him, you know, or et cetera, et cetera. So I think the first place to help with this is actually to reduce the loneliness. And that just starts, you know, by making friends locally one at a time.
Yeah, but it would seem to me like, you know, parents, it's difficult to just go out and pick friends for your kids and then have to analyze all this stuff, because, I mean, they're going to go to public school and they're going to get educated by this stuff. They're going to get exposed to it. They get a vocabulary there, because the majority of times that my kids used to go to school and I used to tell them, you don't use curse words in the house. And then they come home with this vocabulary and say, where'd you hear that? School. Where are you getting exposed to the big elephant in the room, like Sherry's referring to? School. You got all these girls that all of a sudden show up and, gee, they look really good. Well, it used to be a guy. Yeah. Wow. You know, and they get enamored with this stuff, and they get curious. And then the parents, of course, being very religious or not plugged into what's going on because they're too busy focusing in their own lives, turn around and go, oh, what are we supposed to do?
I do think parents and not just parents, but I mean, as kind of an extended family, right, between parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles, people need to be having discussions about, I mean, okay, you know, maybe one of us, you know, needs to quit a job, in order to help the kids. Could grandma homeschool the kids? Could she, you know, come and help part-time, you know, while mom only works part-time, you know, and has more time to focus on the kids? I do think people need to have more margin in their lives, because you really can't grow relationships when every single minute of your life is spoken for. And I do think families need to come together as extended families. I've seen a lot of grandparents moving across country to help drive their grandkids to a Christian school that is good. I've seen people moving all the way across country to put their kids in a good Christian school. And I mean, I know people make a lot of sacrifices to homeschool their kids. And frankly, my kids, you know, go to a Christian school, and part of the reason is because of that peer effect. I want my kids to be around peers whose parents are more skeptical of phones, who, when their kids have an issue, they address it morally, you know, and so that my kids just don't have peers who are completely unsupervised, like no one cares about them, and so their brains are full of smut. But that's just the negative side. But I also think just there's so many positive reasons that people aren't aware of. But if your kid gets a good education, it's indescribable how happy it makes your home life. I mean, the children, you know, when they're learning actual history, when they love to read biographies, like my 9-year-old son does, you know, he just read, you know, about a stop on the Underground Railroad. You know, he picked the book up himself. He was so interested in it. When you're having discussions around the table, you know, about, I don't know, just the pastor's sermon, you know, that last week, that is such a happy home life and people need to have more of it. But in order to get to it, you may need to make, you know, your priorities clearer and maybe, you know, work and maybe, you know, sports and all the other things that are keeping you running ragged from morning to night. You need to cut something out, perhaps.
No doubt. Chance in West Virginia, you got a quick minute. Go ahead.
Hello, folks. You know, it's becoming abundantly clear to me that it's a time that people break away, form their own self-sustaining communities, and keep all this nonsense out of their communities. But unfortunately, we live in an age where neighbors don't know their neighbors or don't even want to know their neighbors, that I think it's a tough road to hoe. What do you think?
Well, I mean, Chance, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, everybody is like isolationist now, and that's all because of what they did during COVID, and I appreciate your call. Boy, I mean, that's a bigger elephant in the room, isn't it, Joy? I mean, how do you get these kids? I mean, you have to engineer them, but you can't shelter them forever because pretty soon they're going to have to go out in the world, right?
I mean, I just think of that in terms of an on-ramp, right? So when my kids are under middle school, you know, I want them to be completely protected. Around middle school, we start to have more conversations. And then high school, you know, they're doing more on their own and they're, you know, coming and talking with us for backup or to get clarity. And so you're right. The kids have to live in the world. We can't shelter them. But an on-ramp will be better than immediate exposure at birth.
No doubt. I appreciate that. Joy Pullman, thank you so much. The book, False Flag, Why Queer Politics Mean the End of America. You can get it by clicking on the guest tab at thepowerhour.com. Until tomorrow, we'll see you. God bless you. God bless the United States of America.
Formula designed to help create an environment that's hostile to invading organisms. Made with a blend of herbs and other natural ingredients such as wormwood, which has often been used in traditional medicine as a dewormer. If unwanted organisms are affecting your health, Paratrex can help bring it all back in balance. Order today from thepowermill.com or call 877-817-9829. Are you tired of trying to figure out how to get all your fruits and vegetables into your busy lifestyle? OptiVita Complete Essentials provides you with 22 whole food vitamins and minerals, 29 fruits and vegetables, probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for ultimate health and nutrition. 30 individual packs, now less than $3 per day. Get your OptiVita Complete Essentials by calling 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products. And he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the- the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.